for the late fall holidays. First, let's look into the UW Parkside Nonprofit Leadership Conference. With me are three guests who will be sharing their personal and organizational journeys, specifically their journeys toward being and leading their agencies to a greater focus on equity, diversity, and inclusion. My guests are Tamara Coleman, the executive director of the Shalom Center, a member of the planning committee, along with myself, and the progenitor of the idea of having an agency panel of sharing experiences. Also with us this morning are Allie Hag, the president and chief executive officer of the United Way of Racine County, and Ahmad Kawi, the president and chief executive officer of the Racine Family YMCA. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
We're going to dive right into the stories the three of you will be sharing and why at the conference. It will be at UWP in person, but of course that could change to hybrid or digital, depending. There is a modest charge to attend, and we'll get to the details later. Tamara Coleman, Shalom Executive Director, you're the moderator of this agency panel that we have a couple of members on with us this morning. We're going to be talking about EDI, Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, and the journey that they and their agencies have been on. Tell us a little bit about how this came about as you planned for the committee.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Len. First, thank you for having me on. This is very exciting, and I'm looking forward to this nonprofit leadership conference. But like the Shalom Center, a lot of charitable nonprofits have been on this path of exploration to identify how to build the core values of diversity, equity, and inclusion into all of their operations, right? It's all over the place. We hear it every day. But then also, how do we model those values as we advance our own individual missions within our agencies? And I know that many believe that embracing diversity, equity, and inclusion as organizational values is a way to intentionally make space for positive outcomes to flourish, whether in direct services or in the nonprofit capacity building, or just whatever they're doing within their community. And so I really thought it was really important during this conference as we venture into this realm of EDI or DEI, it's called many different things. I think it was really important for us to, as local agents right here in southeastern Wisconsin, there was no reason for us to have to look all across the country, right? We know right here in our own neck of the woods, we have agencies that are doing the work, and they're doing the work very well. And so I thought, gosh, it would be wonderful for us to find out who those agencies are that are doing it really well. And we kind of knew who they were just from word of mouth and just reading about what they're doing. How about getting them to share with other nonprofits what the work is they're doing, how they did it, best practices, the hiccups, the good, the bad, the ugly, all of those things. And I have no doubt that individuals from agencies will walk away after November 17th with some great resources and tools and how they can begin to make change within their own agency. So I'm really excited for the opportunity to talk to some great agencies and great people.
I wonder if you would share with us something that you have learned in this process. What stands out to you, Tamara Coleman, as you've gone through this yourself?
But I'm not the only agency out here struggling. I'm not the only agency out here trying to do this work and do DEI work and just having difficulty getting it done. You know, there's a different lens that you have to look through. There's different people are at different levels of understanding around DEI. So the work is not easy. So I don't want to have to reinvent any wheels if I can learn from my nonprofit colleagues out there in the community and within southeastern Wisconsin, really. I don't want to have to do that. I can learn from the work that they've already done and make it a little bit easier for myself, my agency, and hopefully others.
So it isn't something that you can just snap your fingers. It's something that has to be very intentional, is what I'm hearing you say, and thoughtful.
Absolutely, Len. It's definitely got to be intentional, which is why the speakers that the panelists, we looked for them, and it was an intentional reason why we're looking for them.
Well, thank you very much. Now, I'd like to move on to get to our next panelist, and I'm going to call on you, Allie Hag, to tell us what you're learning at the United Way of Racine.
Thanks, Len. And we are very excited to be participating in the conference in November. I think our journey as an organization started in 2013 when my predecessor made the decision to focus our community conversations, which are kitchen table style discussions with community members that focused on race, equity, and inclusion. And that was about a 2-year process where we spoke to hundreds of individuals in our community that both were directly impacted and decision makers. So at the end of the 2-year process, we did a master report out to Racine and talked a little bit about some of the themes and challenges that we had identified as an organization. And we made a commitment to implement certain practices as an organization to support the Racine community around REI. Right after that process was done, we soon realized as an organization that we had not stopped to look internally at what we did to focus on REI and DEI focused on our staff and our own internal culture. And we were trying to advise the community on some of the standards that we felt were best. And so that was one of the best learnings that I think that we had as an organization, is that we had to get our own house in order before we could look externally to support our community. And so for the years following, we really focused heavily on supporting our staff and developing a culture where our organization and the people that worked for us could have comfortable conversations around race, had trainings around many different diversity elements, whether that's LGBTQ or religious views or race or age or many different focus areas. And so we created a diversity committee that it represents every element of our organization, from administrative assistance all the way up to our senior leadership. And they created a 3-year plan for our staff to implement practices and trainings in order to develop how we do things internally and really affect our culture. And so we did that. And now we are starting to look a little bit more externally in how we support our community. So I can tell you that when we started to look internally, it was a very difficult process because there was not a lot of support out there to guide us in a direction. We felt like we wanted to do this work, but we didn't really know how to start it. So that was a process that we went through. And now we are turning outward and implementing things like our $1 million equity innovation fund that we will be opening up in 2022 that will focus on supporting programs and organizations that want to make impact and affect communities in a cross-sector way that will support equity in our community. We know that Racine is identified as one of the worst communities for Black Americans to live, and we want to try to affect that. We also look at our own impact and the work that we're doing to support things like the community schools with our LIFT initiative and programming that we're funding, and really trying to look at that through an equity lens as well. Those are all things that we've done as an organization to try to grow both internally and now kind of transition that support and growth externally to our community.
That's great. And I imagine this also is going to have an impact on how you talk about your clients and the people who are served by your agencies, and how you talk to donors about what it is that you're asking them to do. Isn't that so?
Absolutely. I think historically we've always, and I think many of us as nonprofits, it's a situation where you are earning money based off of the people that you're serving, which is not ideal. What you want to do is identify the gaps in your community, the opportunity gaps, and serve the individuals that are underrepresented, and do it in a very intentional way. It's no longer looking at your community and just doing good work because you think you need to help people, those people, the people that need support. It's being defined and direct with your impact so that you can see measurable outcomes. And we're starting to see that, and we're very happy with it.
Very interesting. I'm going to turn now to you, Ahmed Kawi, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Racine Family YMCA. Please share with us, sir, some of the things that you're learning and trying to do, and what your equity, diversity, inclusion journey is like at the Racine Y.
Thank you, Lynn. I'll say this, that when I came under the Y in 2004, I actually attended a national conference. It was called 150 Years of African Americans in the YMCA. And that actually was in October, I believe, of 2003. I went early before I got officially under the Y. And so when I came under the YMCA as a national organization, we were already at a national level addressing how Ali was saying internally that we had a problem as a Y of when 93% of our CEOs were white men. And most of the leadership in the national organization and across the country were having issues. So I came in a very pivotal time that we were really taking a look at how our own house was doing. And then coming to this, my current position, you know, it was something at a time where we had the murder of George Floyd, and then we turn around and then we have the shooting of Jacob Blake right south of us. And it was time that as a local Y that we had to start to really make change, not only based on race and gender, but the many other forms of diversity that we have in Southeast Wisconsin. And with the state of Wisconsin YMCAs, there's 33 YMCAs. We have now, and I'm being the only African-American CEO in a YMCA in this state, and I'm Racine's first African-American CEO. So now the state, we have a state alliance of YMCAs, and the one thing that we've done now has created a social responsibility committee, statewide committee, to help YMCAs across the country start to create their own diversity, equity, inclusion movements. And so that's something that we are really, we have launched at a statewide level to support all of us as we are looking more into diversity, equity, and inclusion. And each Y is different. What we do here in Racine is totally different from what is done in Green Bay, Rhinelander, right? And so we're trying to figure out what's that common thread, because in our mission statement, it says we're for all. Okay, we're for all. As Racine Family YMCA, like I said, once I came in, it was the Y, it was a traditional Y. We had traditional programs. And today we have, you know, three branches. One is our traditional branch in Mount Pleasant. Then we have a community center that we run. That's a historic community center that has served the African-American community and the Hispanic community in Racine for many years, called the George Bray Center. And then we took over another nonprofit, which has been around for over 100 years, which was referred to as the Family Service of Racine. And so as a Y, not only do we have a diverse staff and do we have a diverse clientele, but we have reaches and we have programs that reaches all different areas of the social determinants of health. And so for us, diversity, equity, and inclusion is extremely important, because we don't reach this one type, one group, one gender. We're reaching everybody. And we have to have a staff that's well-educated, not about only themselves, but about the people that we're serving. And so this is something that started at a national level. We're doing it at a state level of YMCAs. And then even locally, we're always striving to better educate ourselves to be able to achieve the goals set for United Ways and our other funders and our donors, who expect us to help the community get better.
Thank you, Executive Director Kawi. We appreciate that. I'm going to turn back to my colleague on the planning committee, and I should disclose that not only am I on the planning committee for this conference, but I'm going to be co-presenting a session with one of my professional colleagues from Kansas City, who is the vice president for fundraising and marketing of an organization, a wonderful organization called the Family Conservancy. Executive Director Coleman from the Shalom Center, why don't you fill us in a little bit now on the background of this conference? What is it? Where is it? Why is it? Give us the P's and Q's, would you please?
Absolutely. So I am looking forward to seeing everyone at the UW Parkside on November 17th. We'll start promptly at 7:30 a.m. with some registration. We'll go to about 3 o'clock. Lunch is provided, and I don't want any of you to miss not only the panelists, but we have a wonderful dynamic keynote speaker, Dr. Andre Howard. He's the Senior Director of Equity, Diversity and Inclusion and Engagement with the Alliance for Strong Families and Communities and Councils on Accreditation. Ooh, that's a mouthful, Len, huh? He is our keynote speaker. He's gonna be leading us through the day. We have several different breakouts. Len, you mentioned one that you're facilitating. We've got using data as a flashlight. We've got Let's Connect, equity and fundraising, strengthening capacity, diversity, staff and leadership. I mean, it goes on and on. And so you can register, and I would love for you all to stop what you're doing right now and go register at uwp.edu/NPLC. And so if you just need to Google and you didn't hear anything that I just said, just Google Nonprofit Leadership Conference at UW Parkside and it'll come right up. How easy is that? It's a small fee of $79 if you register by November 2nd. And then it will go up about $20 after November 2nd. So we're asking that you please register early. We're getting almost to capacity. We're only going to be doing about we're getting close. Our last meeting, we were saying it's very close to capacity. So I encourage you to register early. Don't delay. And I look forward to seeing everyone on the 17th, Len.
Yeah, and that's only a couple of days away from this broadcast. On Tuesday after this broadcast is the last day to get the bargain rate of $79, which I think includes a modest lunch as well.
Yes,
of some kind, right?
Now,
Tamara, talking about these issues is really very difficult for many of us, and we're all learning together. And on this Community Matters program here with you all, I want to just spend another couple of minutes talking just in general and saying that when we look at equity, diversity, and inclusion, it has many, many aspects, doesn't it? And I wonder if one of you would like to pick up on that in terms of how multifaceted this is. And it takes a lot of thinking and a lot of work and a lot of intentionality in terms of how we talk about what we do and why we do it and how we also bring our clients into the picture, the people we serve into the picture. They work just as hard as our staff does in terms of making progress with their own lives and improving their own lot. Isn't that so? Ali, would you like to talk about that a little bit?
So I would say that it is a difficult subject matter. Myself being a middle-aged white woman, when my predecessor approached me about discussing having topics and conversations around race, equity, and inclusion, I was super nervous. You know, I didn't feel like I had much to add to that conversation, as well as preconceived concerns of what people would think of me if I had that conversation or participated in those. And I think that's where education is so very important for our staff, because you need to get to a point where you have a deeper understanding of our country's history and where we are and where we want to go. And that also, you know, funnels down to the clients that we serve, making sure that we're aware of the disparities in our community and how that affects every single person. So it's not just around race. It's like I mentioned before, we're looking at LGBTQ, we're looking at religion, we're looking at socioeconomic, we're looking at neurodiversity. All of those things, all of those different cross sectors are affected by diversity, and people are impacted in different ways. So that also means that we need to look at the data that our community has and have a deeper understanding of the affected communities and how we can play a role in supporting those communities.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I wonder if President of the Racine family, why Mr. Kawi, anything you'd like to add to that in a moment or two?
Yeah, no, that the thing that what Ali is saying is, you know, diversity is not just race, it's not just gender. Diversity, and again, when I talk to Ys across the country, it is their diversity is it's a different topic, you know, and we all have our implicit biases, right? We all have that. And the discussions, we can't be scared to have the discussions, but we have to understand that we're all trying to come from a good place when we have discussions, and we're trying to get to a point where we're not tolerating each other, that we are supporting one another. Because the big thing is we all belong to some group, right? And because I'm African-American male, because I'm an African-American male who happens to be Muslim running a Christian organization, you know, I check a few boxes, right? But when someone from a different group is being discriminated against because of whatever that difference is, I can understand. I may not understand the lifestyle or whatever that is, but I can understand how it means to be discriminated against. And that's why I can support that. And so that's what this is really about.
Well, thank you all very much for giving us a peek at this important conference here in southeastern Wisconsin. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
You.
Now we turn to the second great event in the not-for-profit sector here, the community benefit and the community-directed sector. And, you know, that's really an important part of our southeastern Wisconsin regional economy. The Goodfellas Organization, in coordination with many human development services agencies in Kenosha County, will once again be distributing winter clothing, toys, and a holiday meal to some 4,000 children and their families during the next couple months. I'm now with two of the important volunteers with the Goodfellas, which is also known as Kenosha Christmas Charities. Welcome to Community Matters, Betsy Brown, President of the Goodfellas, and Sherry Dabbs, the Holiday House Coordinator. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Lynn.
All right. Now, Sherry Dabbs, let me begin with you. You are on the scene when the clothing, toys, and food cards get distributed. Please share with us how this affects the families that are served. What do they tell you about the program, about how they feel, and how it helps them for the winter and the holidays, please, Sherry?
Well, for the past 29 years that Goodwill has been involved in the Holiday House and the distribution of winter coats, hats, gloves, and other winter garments, we have served 51,650 children by warming the community one coat at a time. A coat is so much more than a clothing garment. It's a security for them on a cold day when they're at the bus stop. It's also a reminder to them that someone cares. Children are one of our nation's greatest assets, and the items this program distributes to the families are just a message of hope. It's a big help. A lot of people can't afford to give their kids coats, gloves, and boots, one family has told me. It's pretty cool what Holiday House does, if you ask me, another family said. I think it helps out a lot of people, and there are so many people having hard times these days, another family said.
Sherry, can you tell us a little bit more about how they react and what it's like to be in the midst of this distribution? It must be really some kind of an experience for you.
It's a quite humbling one, actually. When Goodwill became involved in this program in 1992, so it's been almost 30 years, we've only grown to be bigger and better at what we do. And obviously none of that could be done without our community or the Goodfellas.
What's the spirit like in the room with not only on the part of the families and the children that are being served, but also on the volunteers? What kind of emotions do you see expressed during this?
Well, I think most of our volunteers realize it's not about Santa Claus. It's about the magic and the spirit of Christmas. When you give a toy to a child, you give them a little something of their own to cherish and enjoy. This is why we're so grateful for the toy donations and the generosity of Kenosha Christmas Charities to provide the new toys. It's a wonderful gesture that makes a big difference. Since our inception with the partnership with Goodfellas, we've distributed just short of 100,000 toys to children in the Kenosha community. And if you reflect on your own life and recall what it meant to receive a toy at Christmas, you can't help but realize the positive impact that a new toy had on your life. Concurrently, you can imagine how devastating it would be if you didn't receive something and all your friends received new toys. Many may recall what a neighbor received when a neighbor received nothing. And I was actually a mentor to a girl at a school who had told me, because she had received stuff through Holiday House, that she had Santa Claus come to her house and she was so happy because she was able to tell her friends that she received stuff and she wasn't embarrassed and wasn't getting made fun of anymore.
Wow, that's a heartwarming story. And I might point out that we call ourselves, and I'm on the board of this organization, I must disclose, and a donor, that we call ourselves Kenosha Christmas Charities, but we also recognize that it's not only a Christian holiday that gets celebrated at this time of year. Other religions celebrate at this time of year in various days and months, depending on the calendar. And we are open to all, aren't we? Now, Betsy Brown, you are the president of the Goodfellas, which, of course, is a board composed today not of just men, as it was in the beginning. And this goes back many, many years. I know you'll mention that at a time when Christianity was by far the dominant religion in Kenosha. It shares that spot now with many other faiths. President Brown, tell us a little bit about this long and inspiring history of your organization, please.
Thank you, Len. Thank you for calling me President Brown. I was elected by a very few people for this position. The Goodfellas is most likely the oldest nonprofit of its kind in Kenosha. We are into our 91st year of giving, and you saw these fantastic numbers, or you heard these fantastic numbers that Sherry just gave you of what the Goodfellas has done over this length of time. And she's really only quoting that time when she was involved, that she, you know, from which she has figures. So it goes back so much farther. In 1930, during the Great Depression, the publisher of the Kenosha News gathered community leaders to an event to raise money to provide new toys to children in Kenosha whose parents were without an income. This happy band of men only called themselves at first the Christmas Basket Fund and later renamed themselves the Goodfellas. And in the beginning, the men themselves assembled the baskets. And so successful was the first event that toy distribution became an annual affair. And as the years progressed, fruit baskets and candy were added. The Goodfellas was always associated with the Kenosha News, and it still looks upon the Kenosha News as a sponsor. In the 1960s, with my husband at the helm, the fundraising event was revved up to include a dinner with raffles, an auction of items contributed by Kenosha business community. Invitations were sent to hundreds of people, and usually in approximately 400 people attended a Goodfellas event the first week of December. That date has continued to be the date for Goodfellas events. However, last year and again this year, the Goodfellas are not having an in-person event. We are considerate of our donors, and we feel that they do not want to be confined in a dining room for several hours.
We're pretty closely packed. That dinner is a great success. And with all the auction tables and everything, we are literally cheek by jowl most years. So we've decided as a group to just exercise on the side of caution, haven't we?
Exactly. And it's however, last year, our first non-event, we were able to collect cash and exceptional amount to enable us to continue to do what we do. To accomplish the purchasing of the toys and the coats, Holiday House, under the auspices of Goodwill, was formed, as Sherry says, 29 years ago. Holiday House is a consortium of social service agencies in Kenosha, and representatives from these agencies help to collect gently used clothes, gently used coats. Not sure, Sherry, are we still getting used coats?
Unfortunately, for the past 2 years, because of COVID, we have been unable to do coat drives.
Well, I was going to mention that we did have coat drives then, and the coats were cleaned at no cost by Martino's, so that when they were displayed, they looked like new coats. So we have representatives from these agencies who help our customers with the selections of the things that they need. There's someone there to take a child, show him or her what coats are available, to show the head of a household what toys are available for them. The distribution resembles, in a way, a retail establishment. There is a way for people to really get some personal attention when they are, quote, shopping for the coat or the toys. And the agencies with Holiday House are often assisted by representatives from maybe a factory in town who have employees who want to help out, from teen groups, from social service agencies. So we get a lot of volunteers who find that's a way they can help with this organization. Now, Sherry, of course, is the CEO of all of this, and I can't say enough good words about what Sherry does. She's just outstanding in her job.
Sherry, let's have Sherry go into that, perhaps, Betsy. Let's ask Sherry to tell us how families sign up, how they participate in this really remarkable volunteer-driven, this is all a volunteer thing. It's we have some of the staff of agencies in town that we coordinate with do pitch in and help in certain ways, but the driving force of this is people in our community, people like you who are listening. Sherry, how do we get families information? How do they sign up to participate? What are the different avenues so that people who ought to be able to access this benefit at the late holiday period each year, how can they do that, please?
Although we have utilized the agencies in the past, because of limited staffing at those agencies, we had to work quickly last year, and we came up with an online registration form and process, and they also can call and register online here at the Job Center. But there is also a link to an online application where they can enter all their own information, and we get that. Hopefully one day we will once again have all our partner agencies back at the table and having them help us along as well.
So detail the process. I have a family that should be taking part in this program. What do I tell them to do exactly? Or where do they go online, Sherry?
Okay. Well, if they use one of the two avenues available currently. They would just need to provide, obviously, Kenosha address. The program is actually for Kenosha residents only. And information about their children, as far as like, we do use a social security number as our way to prevent duplication of services. So name, birth date, social security number, and male, female status. So we know on the back end what to order and that sort of thing. Also other adults in the home, because that'll come in to play when they get their food cards to go to the grocery store to purchase their food.
And tell us again, just to make sure that we're all clear, where one goes to get this access, deliver this information. How do you do that?
Okay, well, the actual phone number that the individuals can call to register over the phone is 262-697-4549 or 262-605-6600. And then there's an online link that you can find on the Kenosha County website.
All right, why don't you give us those phone numbers again and how to get to that website, okay? Make sure everybody has a chance to write it down. Thanks.
Okay. So it's the first phone number is 262-697-4500. And the second phone number is 262-605-6600.
And the website is where?
It is KenoshaCounty.org. And then you would look under, actually it's right on the main page there. So then you'd click on Holiday House and there's that link to fill out the online application.
Well, that's terrific. That doesn't sound like it's too difficult. And hopefully, and if people without internet access can go to the public libraries where we have lots of opportunities for internet access there. President Brown, Betsy Brown, you referenced that all this sharing costs money to help deliver community equity at the holiday time each year. Ms. Brown, can you go into a little bit of detail as to how our listeners can help? They can't attend our annual dinner. This is a not-for-profit organization, and we're a public radio station, so we do cooperate with not-for-profit organizations in our listening area. You don't have to be a resident of the city of Kenosha, do you? You can be a resident of the county of Kenosha to receive benefits, and anybody can. We'll take money from anyone. We don't care where you live when it comes to helping finance this operation. Betsy, please tell us how one may make a gift, please. And how people can become sponsors of this year's effort as well, because we do have organizations, individuals, and companies who make larger donations, and we recognize them in a special way. Betsy, go ahead.
We have sent invitations to a virtual event to those people who have been our consistent attendees and have asked for a donation in the price of the dinner if they wanted, which would have been $90. For $50, they can sponsor one child if they want to. There is an advertisement that runs in the Kenosha News quite frequently. I don't know if I saw one in Sunday's paper or not. We have a piece of our puzzle, which we call grassroots. And there is an application, a form you can fill out and enclose with a check and send, and the address will be there. I will give it to you also. So that anyone, if you have $1, $5, $10, $100, you can donate through the grassroots, which is really the easiest way to do it. Well, of course, we do have sponsorships that start at $1,000 and go as high as you want to. And of course, we're grateful for people who give large amounts. And fortunately, we do have some people in Kenosha who are so generous. Most information can be found on our website, which is KenoshaGoodfellows.org. Very easy. And on that, you can also see photographs from previous events. You'll find information on how to make a donation. I think that's the easiest thing. I can give you an address to send it if you'd like, Lynn. But I think the easiest thing for people is to look at our website, Kenosha Goodfellows, all one word, KenoshaGoodfellows.org.
Yes, and that mailing address is just a post office box, right?
It's just a post office box.
It's box 640 in Somers, Wisconsin, yes. 53171.
Yes, all right. Now,
how about that donor recognition piece in the Kenosha News?
That's just what I was about to say.
How does that work? Yeah.
Well, when you make a donation, it is recorded, and these names appear in the Kenosha News probably once every 2 weeks, once every 3 weeks. And at the end of the year, there's a full page of every name of everyone who has donated. So there is that recognition as well. So of course, you can see if your friends donated. There's an opportunity to be a little nosy if you want to by looking at the list.
Now, you can donate anonymously if you wish.
Of course, you can donate anonymously. And yes. That is easy to do through the grassroots link. Yes.
And of course, we know who you are, but we won't publish or release your names publicly. Yes. And the other thing that people often do, and in fact, some of my own family members will make a gift in honor of a living person or family member. And one of my cousins makes a gift every year in honor of his parents, which I think is very heartwarming. And
I find it very heartwarming. There will be, even today, donations that are made in memory of Howard Brown. And Howard has been gone for 10 years, and people still remember him. So I find that, of course, especially heartwarming. But we are very grateful for the Kenosha News. They do continue to be a sponsor. They always were involved, as I say, from day one, and continue to be, because this is a Kenosha community charity. We help so many people. And again, I look back at those figures that Sherry just gave, which are astounding, the number of children. Last year, it was over 4,000. And about, I think I'm correct, Sherry, 1,500 families. Now, you know, the icing on the cake when is the gift card for food, which is given at the time when toys are picked up.
That's certainly right. Well, you know, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm so appreciative to Betsy Brown and Sherry Dabbs for describing how the Goodfellows works. Thank you so much for alerting us to how we can help direct families to this wonderful resource and how we can contribute. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta urging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.